Christian Venture. How are you guys doing this morning? Yeah, hey, I'm Chuck Eastman, if you haven't met me, and I'm excited to be teaching this morning. How many of you guys are excited about Thanksgiving next week? How many of you like Thanksgiving is like better than Christmas? A few of you. Somebody the other day was like, man, Thanksgiving is so much better than Christmas because there's no drama. You just eat food. And I can relate to that. Food. And ironically, it just happened to be that the Sunday before Thanksgiving, we would have a sermon about food. Isn't that interesting? Now, today we're going to be in chapter 6 in Mark. We've been kind of journeying through the book of Mark, one of the accounts of the life of Jesus. And today we come to one of the most famous miracles in the ministry of Jesus, the feeding of the 5,000. In fact, it's the only miracle that's recorded in all four accounts of the life of Jesus. In Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, each gospel has an account of the feeding of the 5,000. And so it's an incredibly important miracle that the writers of the New Testament want to show us about the life and the ministry and the character of Jesus. And so that's what we're going to be looking at this morning. If you have a blue Bible in front of you, it's page 1000 or 1001, and we're going to pick it up in verse 30. Verse 30, our story starts like this. The apostles returned to Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. Just pinning that for a second, if you were here last week, and if you weren't, by the way, you need to go back and watch it online. Tim just crushed it, talking about the ways we respond to Jesus. But what happened, if you weren't here last week, is that two things happened. The disciples were sent out two by two, and they went to towns all over Galilee to share about the King Jesus who had come. And also, Herod had heard about all of that, and in the middle of all of the things that were going on, he had killed John the Baptist. And so coming into this moment, the disciples are coming back, telling Jesus all that had happened in all the towns that they had gone to. And in the context of that, John the Baptist, one of the leading figures of the movement, had had his head cut off. That's pretty dramatic. So you can sense already there's some tension in the air in this moment. Verse 31, and Jesus said to them, come away with me by yourselves to a remote place and rest a while. For many, and this is the disciples, this is people all around them, many were coming and going, coming to them and asking them and working with them, and they had no leisure even to eat. They were so busy doing ministry. They were so busy serving people. They were so busy teaching people that people were coming and going that they couldn't even stop to eat. And right before we get into this big miracle, I think Mark wants to show us a couple of really important things about our connection with Jesus. The first is that there's a lot of misconceptions when it comes to a relationship with Jesus. Misconceptions that Christians have and people who don't know Jesus. And here's the misconception, that being a Christian means doing things for Jesus. And so for some of us who've been in the church for a long time, our whole idea of Christianity is, I've got to do more for Jesus. And for a lot of people looking in on Christianity, one of the reasons people are afraid to even take a step towards Jesus is to say, hey, I'm not really ready to do all that stuff that you've got to do to be a good Christian. And what Mark wants to show us is that relationship with Jesus is first and foremost about being with Jesus. Jesus had sent them out, yes, to do some amazing things. And they had come back, and they were so busy that it was important to Jesus, both in a moment where a leading figure of their movement had his head cut off, John the Baptist. That's the cousin of Jesus, by the way. That it seems to be important to Jesus to say, hey, come with me. Let's get away. Let's slow down. Let's rest. And actually, I think there's so many of us that we miss out on what Jesus has to offer because we refuse to slow down. There's so many of us in the way that we relate to Jesus that we miss so much of what it means to actually walk with Jesus, to know Jesus, to experience Jesus. We miss out on so much of that because we won't slow down. And I just think just early on this morning, this is maybe one of the most important things that we'll hear this morning here in the Bay Area. This is the fastest paced culture I've ever lived in. The hustle life here is intense. People work, they grind, they go. And then you add layer on top of that, like you got a family and you got kids. I mean, your kids are in every kind of club sport, right? And they're every season that comes by, they're traveling, they're moving, they're going. I mean, it's an intense, busy season. Schools here are intense. I mean, I was reading an article about the public school system in the Bay Area, just the intense performance that the students are under here, just the hustle of performance. And I just want to say that some of that is beautiful and all the innovation that comes out of the Bay Area, but I want to say some of it keeps us from knowing Jesus. Some of it keeps us from really pausing and looking into his heart to hear the things he might want to say to us. And I think right out of the gate, the disciples could easily buy into the lie that Jesus has picked them and chosen them and invited them to be on this big mission, and their whole existence is to do stuff for Jesus. And Jesus is saying, hey, what, would you come away with me? Would you come rest with me? Now, let's see how that plays out in this story. Look at verse 32. It says, and they went away in a boat to a remote place by themselves. Now many saw them, this is crowds of people, they saw them going on the boat, they recognized who they were, Jesus and his disciples, and they ran on foot from all of the towns, and they got there, it's a town of Bethesda, we know from one of the other accounts, they got to the town ahead of them. And when he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. So you have this moment, Jesus, he's probably even grieving a little bit, John the Baptist's death. He wants to pull away with his disciples. He just wants to spend time with them. They get on a boat. They try to go to a remote town. People see them get on the boat. They're traveling all around this lake to get to that town ahead of them. And by the time Jesus gets there, there's thousands of people there. And I love the response of Jesus. I don't know how you would respond when you're tired and when you've decided, I'm tired and, I've been working really hard and I've got a lot of things going on, so I need a day for myself. You guys know what I'm talking about? Okay, you're gonna have a day to yourself. Some of you guys, man, you're gonna go golfing, you're gonna have a day, some self-care, you know what I mean? And Jesus, in that moment, I love that he didn't go, hey, my goal was to just spend and rest with my disciples. That's so important. But all of a sudden, he sees the crowd. And I think it's an incredible description that we see core to the person and the character of Jesus is that he sees us, he sees the crowd exactly the way we are. Did you guys notice that? He sees the crowd, and he says they're like sheep without a shepherd. If you're new to church this morning, I just want to let you in on a secret. Sheep aren't awesome. They're mostly blind. They're mostly deaf. If people don't take care of them to shear them, their coat will get so heavy that they can't walk. They will run right off of a cliff if the person in front of them is running off of a cliff. They're not that smart or intelligent. I know this doesn't seem like a great description of us in the Bible, but just want you to know that when Jesus saw the crowds and when he sees us how we really are. And this is actually should be a comfort for many of us because so many of us are putting up a veneer of what we are. And we're so desperate that someone would know us. We're so desperate someone would see us. We're so desperate we don't have to perform for other people, but we're so afraid that if they did, they'd reject us. And Jesus sees them exactly how they are, confused, scared, blind, not knowing how to put things together. And I love that he sees us that way and then does something unique. Most of the time, I think in our human experience, when someone sees us, like they get behind the curtain and they see us, our human experience tells us they reject us. Now, isn't that most of what we've gone through? We've all got stories of dating someone we really liked and feeling really tied into that and just being like, you know, some of you guys have to think way back, you know. But you were in a relationship and then all of a sudden something about you came out and that person was like, oh, I'd already said I loved you, but I'm taking that back. I think if that's happened to probably a lot of people in the room this morning. There's a sense in which we have experienced rejection over and over and over again when people have seen the real us. And I love that Jesus sees who they really are, and he is kind, and he meets us where we are. He has compassion. His goal isn't to embarrass them. His goal isn't to point it all out and get to his disciples and be like, did you see them? Oh, man. Yeah, these people, they're messed up, aren't they? Like, you know, we're going to serve them. We're going to love them. We'll even do a few healings. But Peter, these guys, you know that dude, right? He's really screwed up. And I think sometimes we think that's what God's doing. And I think sometimes the reason we think that's what God's doing is because that's what we've experienced from some people who say they know God. And so I think as people who say, man, we're trying to encounter Jesus, we're trying to look at the heart of Jesus, we need to know that Jesus, he comes in to really level with us and say, I see you, but I'm kind. And I'm going to meet you where you are. There's another reality I think that jumps off the page, at least to me, and maybe it's just because of the way I'm wired. It's a simple reality, but it's this. Sheep need a shepherd, and we need a king. I think our American autonomy, self-sufficiency, whatever it is about us, you know, we live in a time in history where we don't really have kings anymore. We're a democracy. We believe in the individual, and we've really kind of pushed off this idea of authority. But I think when it comes to our relationship with God, we need to wake up to the idea that sheep need a shepherd, and we need a king. We need someone to step into our lives and say, hey, this is not as it ought, and I'm the king, I'm the Lord over all of this, and this is the way. And I think so much of what's broken in us has to do with a rejection of the authority of God in our life. And I think even for those of us who call ourselves Christians, sometimes our relationship with Jesus can be separated from any sense that he's the king over my life, that he has any authority over my life. And yet right here, Jesus recognizes, what do they need? They need a shepherd. They need a king. And Jesus is going to draw this out. He's going to point out not only to the crowds about how the crowds need him, but he's also going to point out to the disciples how much the disciples need him. Check out what it says in verse 35. He had been teaching many things, and when it grew late, his disciples came to him and said, this is a remote place, and the hour is late. Send them away to the surrounding countryside and villages and let them buy something to eat. But he answered them, you give them something to eat. Hey, you 11 guys who are super poor fishermen, you feed massive crowd that we have in front of us. And they said to him, offended like, shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give them to eat? Denarii was a day's labor, so for one day's pay. So almost a year pay is what it's going to cost to feed these people. And he said to them, how many loaves do you have? Go and see. And when they had found out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Isn't it amazing that for many of us, our awareness of God usually grows in the place where we realize we're powerless to do what needs to be done or to fix what is broken. Isn't that amazing? That Jesus, kind of in this moment with all these people, looks at the disciples and says, hey, you fix it. All these people that are hungry, these sheep without a shepherd, hey, why don't you solve their problem? And the disciples are immediately aware that they don't have any ability to do that. They don't have any ability to step into that moment and solve the problem. I think for a lot of us, the idea of being powerless offends us. It offends all the self-help stuff that we've been reading, all the stuff we hear about how we can do it and reach all of our goals. But the reality is that until we come to a place to realize that what needs to be actually done in front of us, or what we need to actually fix what's been fractured, is something we can't do. And it's in that moment, our awareness of that, our awareness that this stuff that's going on in our family, this stuff that our kids maybe are struggling in ways, maybe they're struggling with mental health issues and we can't figure out how to solve that, or we can't figure out how to navigate this one conflict in our marriage. The powerlessness we feel in that moment is often the place where we realize that God can do what we can't do, that he can step in to that moment. So Jesus is going to show that they can't do it, and he's going to say, watch. Look at verse 38 again. He said to them, how many loaves do you have? Go and see. And we know from other accounts that they found a boy that had brought his lunch. And when they found out, they said, five loaves and two fish. And then he commanded them all to sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups by the hundreds and by the fifties. And taking the five loaves and the two fish, he looked up to heaven. He said a blessing. He broke the loaves and he gave them to the disciples to set before the people. And he divided the two fish among them all, and they all ate and were satisfied. And they took up the 12 baskets full of broken pieces and the fish, and those who ate the loaves were 5,000 men. And we know from other accounts that they had wives and children that were with them as well. So we're talking probably around 9,000 to 10,000 people. But I don't want you to miss the phrase in verse 42, and they all ate and they were satisfied. They all ate and they were satisfied. In other words, Mark is trying to paint a picture for us of two groups of people. You got the crowds who are sheep without a shepherd, lost, confused, and helpless. You've got the disciples who've actually been given some tasks, and maybe they think, man, we're doing pretty awesome. We went to towns all over the area, and we did amazing things for you, God. And yet both people in this moment realize there's only one person who can meet their need, and it's Jesus. And Jesus shows his character. In fact, Jesus is revealed as the king who satisfies and provides, listen, beyond what we thought was possible. There's an incredible pull on our lives, both inward and outward, to find deep satisfaction in something other than Jesus. There's an incredible pull to say, if you just get this, you'll be satisfied. Fill in the blank. If you just get to a certain level in your company, if you just get to a certain level of financial comfortability, if things in your family are just situated just right, if you're single, you're like, if I just get married, if you're married, if we just have kids, if our kids get into the right school. Again and again and again and again, we are being pulled to say, I'm going to root all of my hope for satisfaction in something other than Jesus. And Jesus is just revealed as the one who says, you'll always be hungry. You'll always be hungry if you root your hope in something other than me. Jesus is saying. And the crowds and the disciples are getting a visual picture. This is a visual picture, by the way, that points all the way back to the Old Testament. Every one of those Jewish men and women sitting on that field with bread that was multiplying in front of them would have thought back to the desert when Moses had taken Israel out of slavery, taken them into the desert, and then there was no food and there was no water in the desert. And God said, it's okay because your God is going to feed you every single day. And every single day in the desert, God produced manna, bread, and he put it on the grass, and they ate it for that day. And you couldn't store it up, and you couldn't save it for the next day, because God wanted them to rely on him every day. So every day he'd come out and he'd put more bread on the grass. And everybody watching this miracle had to think, whoa, this is the moment. It's happening again. We have a king. He's here. And what's he doing? He's making bread. He's providing what we need. This is the king. And then something abrupt happens in the text. It seems to be that Jesus senses that something isn't quite right. Check out verse 45. Immediately, that's the favorite verse in the Gospel of Mark, by the way. Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side to Bethesda, where he dismissed the crowd. That's a short little verse, but it's got a lot of stuff packed in it. Immediately, all of a sudden, he fed them, he taught them, and then immediately he gets his disciples and he says, you gotta get out of here. Like, you gotta go. And those two words together, immediately, and he made them, has the sense that the disciples were saying, what are you talking about? And Jesus was like, no, you gotta go. Get out, go get on the boat. And then he got them on the boat and he went back to the crowd and he said, hey, you guys gotta get out of here. And you get the sense that there's some kind of tension in the air and what's going on here. If you actually, to really know the answer to that, you do have to kind of read the other gospel accounts. And actually, the Gospel of John fills in what was happening in this very moment. John 6, 14 says this, that when the people saw the sign he had done, the loaves, they said, this is indeed the prophet who was to come into the world. And perceiving them, that they were going to come and take him by force to make him king. In other words, they were going, hey, this is it. This is the guy who snaps his fingers and we have all the food we need. This is the guy that we're going to take down Rome right now. And they tried to grab him by force and make him their political king. We're taking Rome down today. And it's an interesting thing because it happens in a context where in that area of Galilee, these kinds of things were sprouting up all the time. In fact, it's the birthplace of the Zealot movement, which had happened probably 50 years before Jesus. But there's a whole part of Judaism that saw it as their main mission to overthrow Rome. And so all of these 5,000 men that are part of this area, they're seeing Jesus and they're thinking, this is our moment, this is our king, it's time to get our sword out, let's go. And Jesus, it seems to be, has to hurry the disciples out. Why? Because the disciples aren't immune. The disciples want the same thing the crowd wants. They go, hey, we got the guy who heals the blind, heals the lame. He's turning bread. He's just magically making more bread. Let's get our sword out. Let's take out Rome now. And Jesus has to get them out. And I think there's something really important for us right here. We're going to see this play out in the last couple of verses here. But many have never met Jesus because they've only come to use him to get the thing they actually want. That's what's happening. The crowds are hearing Jesus. And in this moment, there's actually something they want from Jesus more than Jesus himself. Think about it. Let's just play it out for a second. Let's just do a thought experiment. Let's say that Jesus goes, hey, these 5,000 people, this is a good start to the movement. All right, it's now. All right, arm yourselves. I got power from heaven. We're going. And they could have quickly probably doubled and tripled the size of that army. And they could have gone and taken down Herod. That would have been sweet for Jesus, by the way, because Herod had just killed his cousin. I mean, you could have felt this all going on, man. I'm sure the disciples are going, this is it. This is the moment. Your cousin's dead. The people are behind you. Let's make it happen. But imagine Jesus lets them do that. How many people, once he's put on a throne, how many people know him? Think about it. How many people know him? How many people, when if Jesus is taken and he becomes the political power and he's put on a throne and he kicks Rome out and he rules and he right then and there, he establishes himself, how many people know him relationally? Probably just the disciples. Probably just his inner circle, right? In other words, Jesus wants to give them himself. But you know what? We miss it all the time because we come to Jesus looking for something other than Jesus, don't we? We come to Jesus all the time saying, Jesus, yeah, I want you, but really I want what's on the other side of you. Yes, I want you, but I want you because I want to make sure we never get sick. Or I want you because I want to make sure that nothing ever bad happens to my family. Or I want you so that I make sure that my kids are going to, achieve all of our goals. So I want you. For, again, fill in what you actually want. And listen, what you actually want is your functional God. And Jesus seems to have put his finger on what it is they actually want. And then it's an interesting thing. They're out on a boat. He's made the crowd leave. He's going to circle back and deal with the disciples. Check out how it ends here. Look at verse 46. And after he'd taken leave of them, the crowds, Jesus went on the mountain to pray. And when evening came, the boat was out on the sea, and he was alone on the land. And he saw that they were making headway painfully. In other words, another translation, the NIV says they were rowing, straining against the wind, working painfully against the wind, for the wind was against them. And about the fourth watch, around 3 or 4 a.m., Jesus came to them walking on the sea. And he meant to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the sea, they thought it was a ghost, and they cried out, for they all saw him and were terrified. But immediately he spoke to them and said, take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid. And when he got into the boat with them and the wind ceased, they were utterly astonished, for they did not understand about the loaves, but their hearts were hardened. You know what I think was happening? I think the disciples, when it says their heart was hardened, I think the disciples were ticked off. I think they got on that boat and they were mad. And then to make it worse, have you ever gotten mad and then it seems like everything else goes against you? You know what I mean? Like you're like stomping out mad and then you're getting your car and you're in traffic and you're like, that's right, I figured. You know, you go to the office and all of a sudden everything's just like not going your way and you're like, come on, it's just not my day. I think they were mad and I think they got on the boat and they were upset. And then to make it worse, Jesus is going to walk by them. And that's what he's going to do. Like, they're ticked off on the boat, fighting the wind. I mean, they're fighting this incredible storm. They can't make any headway. I mean, just imagine. I feel like this happened to me so many times. I'm just in here, and I'm just being like, hey, God didn't do what I want him to do, and it's not going to happen, and it's frustrating. Hang on, is he really going to be God? Is he really going to be nice to me? And he must not even love me. And all of a sudden, you know, he's like passing by, but he's not paying attention. Anybody ever felt that way in your walk with God? You're just like, oh, he's going to pass by my marriage right now. Like, it's not going well, and I've been praying, but he's just going to walk right on by, isn't he? I guess this is just the way it's going to go down, isn't it? Or he's going to walk by. Is he walking by? Like, I've been sick for a long time. I've gone to all the doctors. Is he really going to just walk by? Well, I've had this conflict at my job, and I hate my job, and it's like a prison on my life, but I got no other options, and I've been praying for other things. And God, are you just, you're really just going to walk by? And it seems to them that he's going to just walk by. Except Mark is using some language that's incredibly strategic. So that whole passing by language, it's language that actually points all the way back to Moses in the Old Testament. See, there was a time when Moses felt the same way. Moses had the people, they were in the desert. God had promised that they would go into the promised land, and it doesn't seem like it's working out. And God says, yeah, you're gonna go. And Moses gets with God and he has a conversation with God, and he goes, God, are you really gonna come through? God, are you really gonna show up in my life? God, like, what's gonna happen? And then Moses says, God, I need you to show me who you are. And God says to Moses, I'm gonna show you my glory. And I'm gonna speak my name in front of you. And the language that the Old Testament writer uses is he says, I'm gonna pass by and I'm gonna speak my name. And in this moment, Mark wants to show you that on the water, on their boat, in the storm, angry at where is God in the middle of all of this, Jesus is actually trying to show them who he is. And he turns in the story. I don't know if you caught it, but he turns and he says, don't be afraid, it is I. By the way, if you read the Old Testament, in its Greek translation, which every Jew of this time period was reading the Old Testament in Greek, the language of the name of God is ego, eimi. And Jesus says right here, when he says, it is I, he's saying, this is my name. And I think the thing in the middle of all of this, the thing that brings all of this together, what is the heartbeat of Jesus? What is the core mission of Jesus? His mission is to be seen for who he is as king, to be worshiped for who he is. And listen, Jesus wants to be known. He wants to be known. And the beautiful thing about Jesus is that his fierceness to reveal himself and his passion to make himself known and his passion to meet us in our deepest place, He'll move every other circumstance around us to clear space. So that at the end of the day, in the middle of the storm, we realize that we're not gonna put our weight on people. We're not gonna put our trust in money. We're not gonna put our weight in all the other things, our health. But at the end of the day, we're gonna look into the eyes of Jesus and say, you're my king. And I want to worship you right here in the middle of the storm. And you've made it possible for me to know you. And so I don't know this morning, Venture, where you are. I don't know what you've walked through this week. But I know a couple things are true for everybody. You have needs. You have some fractured, broken places in your life. And there is a war on our heart to decide who we're gonna trust. And this morning, Jesus is saying, I think through the text, you don't have anything else you can lean on. You can't fix what's been fractured. Put your confidence in me. I'm a good shepherd. I'm a good king. Let me pray. Jesus, we love you. We come to this place because we want to see you. And if we're honest with our heart, there's many things battling for our affection. There's many things battling for what we'd put our confidence in. But you've demonstrated through history and in our experience today that you're trustworthy. and we can put our confidence in you. God, we've got areas of longing. Oh, they're real. Real areas of longing for you to come through. Real storms of just feeling like we're rowing hard. And we, it's so easy to feel like you don't see us. But today you remind us through your word that you have seen us exactly how we are and you love us. And we can trust you. Would you help us to do that right now as we respond in worship in Jesus' name? Amen.